What are you going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you to another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, C70 at the Bat, Daniel Shoptaw. You'll find me on Twitter at C70. With me tonight, Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily. That's a Medlock 1. And also Kyle Reese from Redbird Daily. You'll find Kyle at, it's Kyle R416?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, there we go. I was looking for it, and I thought it was in my head, but it's good to know I was right.
Yeah, you're on it.
We've got a lot of different things to talk about. We're recording this right after the Cardinals drop a 3-2 decision to the Cubs, and we'll get into that game. But we got a lot more positive things to talk about, and we'll get to all of those in the Redbird Rewind.
He got him! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
All right, well, the Cardinals are coming off a 6-0 road trip. They lost tonight, obviously, but... Alan, you know, we saw three games against the Braves, three against the Marlins, and yes, those are not necessarily the top teams in the National League, but it's still really hard to win six straight games away from your home park.
Oh, absolutely. That's I'm a big I don't know how to say it. I hate when people use the schedule as an excuse. You still have to go to the game. You have to still have to go on the road. You still have to play well, and it's paid players that are playing on that other side. So I'm sorry, I just got my breath taken away from me. The huge injury just happened in the Giants Reds game between the and it was the home plate umpire. I'll leave it at that. But yeah, you've got to go on the road to win, and you got to play well. And I thought it was a very good sign that they could do so. And they typically played, obviously played well in Atlanta since this the first time down there, but they've typically played well in Miami too, so I think it kind of worked in their favor. But I was impressed. I thought they played pretty flawless baseball most of the time.
Kyle, it's almost like the additions of Tommy Pham and Magnaria Sierra especially with their speed, kind of they ran fast enough to put us into some sort of alternate dimension where the Cardinals are good. That really kind of seems to be the catchphrase or the talking point for this week, is how much those guys really impacted this team over the last 6 days.
Yeah, it's they were fun to watch, you know. So the way I look at it is, we all know that a spark, you know, a new guy in the lineup can really create a spark, and that's the best I think I've ever seen Tommy Pham at the plate. You know, obviously the stats show that, but the at-bats he was taking, too, were so impressive. You know, Magnaria Sierra, Mag Sierra, that's a different beast altogether. That's a layer of story on top of story. There's so much to talk about there. But, you know, Tommy in particular came in and really, really impressed me. Again, they talk about his eyesight and what he can see, but that his ability to recognize pitches, especially low and outside. He was laying off of some sliders low and outside tonight. He had a bunch of ground balls today, which is kind of a bummer. But I was so impressed with what I've seen out of Tommy Pham, and he's definitely been a spark.
Let's talk a little bit about what got these guys to the major leagues. Obviously, last week before the show, Stephen Biscotti had gotten hurt and Dexter Fowler had gotten hurt. And Fowler obviously did not go on the DL, although his injury meant they needed some other outfielders as well. And Jose Martinez then gets hurt in Atlanta bringing up Sierra, that was a decision that was a little bit surprising. I mean, there's logical sense to it because of the way baseball's rules work in the 40-man roster. But, Alan, I mean, I can't remember the last time that they brought somebody up from A-ball to make their major league debut.
No, I couldn't recall one as well either when it happened, but it was funny. The day that the rumor started after he was pulled out of that game in Palm Beach, Kyle and I were actually talking about something. And his appearance this year in spring reminded me of Waka's. If you remember, everybody was like, oh, they're several years away, but then they impressed so much that they were right there on the radar. I understand there's probably a lot more to it, especially with the 40-man roster spot and having to be protected this year, that he was the easy pick. But still, I think a lot goes into that, to where even other clubs were asking about him, that he was just an intriguing pick to the ball club. And maybe I would like to think that Mozeliak saw it as, hey, that's exactly what we need. We need somebody that's going to be able to score from first. We need somebody that's definitely going first to third, somebody to spark the ball club. And I think it worked, and I'd like to give he and Matheny a lot of credit for it.
Yeah, Kyle, I mean, what were you thinking? I mean, you know this better. I mean, I got to say, we were a little surprised that he didn't, add maybe one of those AAA veteran guys to the 40-man and just bring that up instead of going with a Sierra who hadn't had that experience.
Yeah, that's you and I talked about it a lot, especially with Luke Voigt. That's a perfect situation to call him up. If he's going to get regular at-bats, you call him up, and then you move Carpenter. But it tells you right away that there's no chance at all that they're going to move Carpenter off of first base. I mean, he might get one, somewhere between 1 to 10 more starts at third if things get weird, but he's not coming off of first base, which I think is something you draw from that. I was pretty – when things looked bad, when it looked like Dexter Fowler wasn't going to be ready to play and he would only be out for a couple games, and Jose Martinez, I think we all expected the worst the way he came up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was all for Sierra. It's the perfect situation because of the 40-man, and Allen's dead on. This is an organization that was so impressed with the way he presented himself in spring training, with his compete level, and with his athleticism and what he delivered. I forgot if it was Matheny or Mozeliak, but they said part of the reason you bring Mags up is because you're dealing with a cavernous Miami. A stadium, and you're also dealing with a kind of an unknown variable in Atlanta, and what exactly you're dealing with that. It leans hitter now, but it seems kind of spacious too, and the gaps. So it was the perfect situation to call him up, and it was awesome to watch him play.
Yeah, it definitely was a lot of fun to see him over those four games now. He does not start tonight, and immediately that, of course, gets people irate, and obviously, everybody wants to see Sierra at home, and I do think he'll get a start before he returns to the minor leagues when it comes off the disabled list. But on the flip side of that, we saw a very, I don't want to say lethargic team tonight. I don't know how much credit you give to Eddie Butler being a guy that felt like the Cardinals should have pounded, but those are the kind of guys they don't actually pound. But I think there were a lot of people that automatically tied his benching to, an offense that sputters. Alan, how much credit is there to that?
I don't know. I thought Butler did look good, but I thought they ran into – well, of course, they they shot themselves in the foot early. They had a chance to score early and didn't. And you're right. I mean, they did look flat. There's no doubt about it. I don't know if that's just the getting back to Bush syndrome. I don't know. For some reason, this just lines out well for the Cubs to win the series. I thought about that from the beginning. I was like, I hate riding in here high and then being so low, because it lines out well for them. But back to your question, I don't know. I think if Fowler's not your spark, then you're in trouble. Then they're going to have to figure out something from here on. I thought he would play at some point tonight, but they didn't put themselves into any issues where they actually needed it. I'm going to be really curious to see what they do when they need him as a defensive replacement and how they play this, because he's the superior defender center fielder. And, are you going to play him out of position, or are you going to move Fowler? Because I don't think that's an option.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and I think maybe one of the reasons we didn't see Sierra tonight is because of that. They don't really know what they want to do there. Because you just spent a whole lot of money for Fowler to play center field. It seems a little bit early to let this guy that, again, hasn't played over a ball, bump him over, even if it's just temporarily.
Let me throw this out to both of you. How much – I know there's a lot of development right now with his bat, and that's gonna be what gets him sent back down, I understand. But I'm not so certain this team is not better if he's not playing center, if Fowler's not playing left. You play Grichuk in right or Piscotty in right, whoever you're more convinced is apt to do it, and go see what you can get for the other one. I'm not so certain that the team's not better with that situation.
I mean, I get what you're saying, and I don't. It's difficult to make a case for arguing, but I also feel like, and this is a small sample size, and the league has not figured him out yet, and he's not hitting for any kind of power. My feeling is that he's going to tail off, and then how much do you want him there for just his glove and occasional speed? I mean, obviously he can play in major leagues right now with the way he can cover the outfield.
Sure,
but you know, I see.
I'm gonna steal your line on this one though. They did make the World Series with Pete Cosma.
Well, this is true, but this lineup isn't quite what that line.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, Kyle, is that out of hand? I mean, you know him more probably than either one of us do.
Yeah, you know, I guess my only concern with that, and I'm one of these guys who's all about if you have the right deal, you trade whoever. That's how I've felt. But my only concern with that is, say you trade Randall Grichuk, and you, for, you know, 3 weeks you run out a really solid, you know, Dexter Fowler, Sierra, Piscotty outfield, and Tommy Pham subs in here and there. You know, what happens if in 4 weeks the league has completely figured Max Sierra out and he's overextending himself? You know, what he's doing right now is he's just keeping things really simple. He's just looking for a fastball and swinging at it. You know, that's a lot of guys get a chance to do that early on because they're seeing more fastballs or they're seeing kind of junk pitches and they can lay off some of the trash. But I guess what I'm saying is my only concern is that in 4 weeks, if Tommy Pham's, you know, back to being Tommy Pham from last year and Mag Sierra is a single A or, you know, single A hitter in the major league level, then what do the Cardinals do? You know, I have my doubts about Harrison Bader's readiness for the major league level. He might show a little bit more between now and then, but that would be my only concern is this is kind of an unusual situation. And I wouldn't want to remove one of them, Piscotty or Grichuk, until I was 100% sure that everything was going to line up in the outfield before I got rid of them.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Piscotty's not the one you're going to be moving either. I mean, let's be honest. I know Mo has, you know, moved Alan Craig in the second year of that extension, but you just signed Stephen Piscotty to, what, a five-year deal, right? You're not moving him 2 months later just because somebody's had a good couple of games. So, I mean, Grichuk is a possibility. I mean, and depending on how all this outfield stuff shakes out, that, you know, that's a reasonable thing. But I think you're right. I think it feels like a lot of people are, and probably rightfully so, because there is a lot of excitement over what these guys did over the last six games. But a lot of people want to just claim that flag and say, this is the way we need to be. And that's just six games. And that's a very small sample size for, you know, again, I feel more confident with Tommy Pham because he's got some experience, and I think there's an argument for leaving him here, which we'll get into the roster configurations here in a little while.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you really have run the risk of ruining what Mag Sierra can be if you try to play him in the big leagues right now for an extended period of time.
Some of my statement does come along the lines of, too, of in order for them to improve, something's going to have to be done that's unorthodox from what we've seen from the Cardinals do before. You know, like at this point right now, if we had talked 2 weeks ago, we all would have said, well, they've got to go get a third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
I've come full circle on that to where you're going to have to convince me it's a damn good player that's better than Jerko right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I honestly think they're going to be in the hunt. I think that they're going to be players of the deadline because they're going to be forced to be, because I completely think
that Archer's going to be a Cub, or somebody with controllable years is going to be a Cub at some point. They're going to improve that staff. I don't think you have to be rash and go make a move to keep up with them, but to stay in the hunt and be able to be a championship team, they're going to have to improve somewhere. And I think it may be something along those lines. You're probably right, though, Daniel. I think they probably want Grichuk to get hot to where he would be more of a valuable commodity and get Piscotty healthy just to be able to play. But that was kind of into my thinking as well, is they're going to have to improve somewhere to keep up and be major players in October.
Yeah, and I mean, the stretch the jerk goes on right now, it's obviously a good thing. And you have to factor in last year, too. And I don't discount that. But part of me still feels like, man, if you have the opportunity to get a Josh Donaldson, a guy that's legitimate.
A game changer, a superstar.
Right.
Yeah, we talked about this. If you can get a superstar,
then you hate to pass that up because Jerko is playing well. And again, it's not a situation where you go out looking for anybody to replace. I mean, you're not getting a Todd Frazier, as we discussed earlier. You know, when third base looked like a black hole, you could talk about a guy like Todd Frazier who, you know, brings you power but doesn't have an average. You're not going to do that with the way Jerko's playing. But if you can get, an all-star like Donaldson, I mean, a guy that, you know, really is a superstar, you know, you try to figure out what you do with Jerko. And that, I don't know. And it's a good thing that you don't have to worry about it now. I think that, you know, back when this team came back from New York, getting close to a month ago now, we thought something had to happen now. And what apparently had to happen was Mike Matheny and John Mozeliak like having a little chat, because ever since then, everything has worked out fine. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think there's a lot of interesting possibility and things that are going to be dancing around in the next couple of weeks. But we may come back to the offense. Let's shift a little bit. Let's talk about some of the pitching staff. And I guess the guy that stands out the most from this week and stood out again tonight was Brett Cecil. Kyle, again, a guy that the Cardinals went out and they signed a 4-year contract with, so they can't cut bait on him after a bad month. But it feels like, you know, every time out there, it's starting to get a little bit worse. I mean, he's going up against left-handed batters that he should be getting out, and he's giving up some big deal. I mean, the home run that he gave up tonight wound up being the difference in the ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been the story, too. It seems like every time he's involved in a game, and it's usually in the negative way, and it usually ends up being the decider of how a game is finished. You know, the player has to agree to go on the DL. I'll preface my next comment by saying that. But he has to realize that he has some type of fatigue issue. And you can go on the DL for shoulder fatigue or elbow fatigue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tyler Lyons is only, you know, a couple days away from coming off the DL. And if in that time Cecil gets put into another game, which he shouldn't, and blows up again, that's, you absolutely have to make that move. He has to go on the DL, or something needs to happen, because like you said, you're not going to cut bait on how much money he makes. He's not going to get, you know, taken off the 40 man. He's not going to get sent down. That's not going to happen. So, you know, that the other option needs to happen. If he's not going to figure it out really quick, Tyler Lyons absolutely needs to take that spot.
Yeah, I mean, Cecil, counting tonight, has given up a run in his last four appearances, one in Atlanta and then the two, you know, twice in Miami. He, again, his inherited runners, he's stranded 56%, which is low. I know that I'm not exactly sure what the standard is for that, but, you know, only if you're letting half of your guys come in, that can't be good. I mean, Alan, like you said, I mean, is that it? Is it have to be some sort of DL? They're going to have to find something, because I know John Mozeliak was talking about him today and just didn't feel like he was, you know, getting his command or really getting the pitches that he wanted. And it's obviously showing that if he can't pitch the way he wants to, he can't pitch.
Yeah, Mozeliak, it was funny on the Bernie show yesterday, he said that. He was really blunt, too. about the approach of how they'll deal with Cecil, and it is just so funny that Kyle, whenever you said that a player has to agree on the DL. I've been saying for a month now that Seagrass is going to be on that phantom DL any day. It's going to happen. Well, then look what Seagrass and Broxton have done. They've completely rebounded. Now you kind of have a little faith in those guys. Then when you see Cecil out there, you're like, oh, here we go again. So, I don't know. Tonight was the one that frustrated me. I kind of had a little admiration for Matheny trying to let him work through it. But tonight it was, I don't know. It was frustrating. A lot of hard hit balls. You know, and that's I've read somewhere that, like, you give a bomb up to La Stella, you need to probably not play baseball anymore. And, you know, I was laughing about that, but I was like, it's just one of those, it's just the gut punch. I mean, that was almost as bad as the Fowler pickoff.
Yeah, the Fowler pickoff was terrible. Actually, I want to correct something. I read this wrong, but, you know, he's actually allowed 56% of his runners to score. Not that he's stranded 56%. It's even worse, so... I mean, you know, that's atrocious. Now, I mean, he had a stretch of a pretty decent stretch, you know, mid-April to the end of April. It just, you know, as of late, it just isn't working. And, yeah, I know it very well may be that disabled list that comes to it. Is that the only weak link? I mean, the rest of the bullpen... I mean, you know that there's probably, it feels to me, they could have off days, but you feel, you know, at least 70-30 that they're probably going to get the job that they need to do done when they get called in.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way the bullpen's composed a little bit. I haven't been one of the people who thought it would be one of the best in the league. It's been about where I thought it would be. There's a couple things that I am a little curious about. And you know, I've kind of been traveling all week, so I've missed a couple games here and there, not all of the games, but you know, there's little things that I like to think to myself often during a game, like what would Tony La Russa do? And there's little moments, like, you know, I understand why they wouldn't have faith in Sam Tuivasa, but you know, he stepped in a big way on Sunday and pitched better than he's ever pitched at the major league level in the most key situation. And, you know, maybe I'm overthinking it a little bit, but that's the kind of game tonight where, you know, Broxton pitched great or, you know, Cecil looked bad. But that's the kind of game tonight where TLR would have put Tui in the game. You know, he would have pitched. So I guess my only complaint is, you know, if you've got a guy on the roster, you might as well try to use him. And you might as well see what you have, especially if other guys are going to struggle here and there. You know, I'm a little worried about, you know, Bowman a little bit. But other than that, I still think the bullpen's solid. You can always look for an upgrade in the bullpen, but I think it's solid.
I think that I'm a little early in the year to be hollering for this, but I'm hoping at some point in the year we see this situation, and I hope you guys will elaborate on this a little bit more. Is there ever going to be a situation to where the bases were loaded and he goes to Cecil right there in the sixth? Are we ever going to see a situation where those bases are loaded in the sixth that he goes and gets Rosenthal? I'm not so sure we will, because I think he likes that eighth and ninth situation, but I thought Rosenthal would have been big in that spot.
You're not going to see that because that would require, I mean, that would, if they were considering Rosenthal in that Andrew Miller type of role that they talked about all winter long, then yeah, maybe.
It's one of those to where I'm in one of those situations, and Daniel, you know me well on this kind of talk, but sometimes your closer's not needed in the ninth. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes back to, I can kind of tell where you're going with your comment too, to where I'm not so sure we have the aptitude to handle that. And I hope that, you know what I mean? I hope you guys know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's... Go ahead, Kyle.
I was going to say, you know, just say in that situation he comes in, he shuts him down, and say... I mean, I guess the reverse of that is, what happens if Jonathan Broxton's the one coming in the ninth inning to close a game? You might not... You know, but I agree with you. I definitely think that you need to change things up. You know, maybe in that situation, because of how dynamite Rosenthal's been, maybe that's the time. You test it with O and see, all right, it, you know... I can really rely on Rosenthal if this game gets tight late. You know, maybe here I go oh and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, gamble that way or even use Rosie like you said. I definitely think that you need to use one of your better relief pitchers in a high leverage situation. But I also think that it's important to have a guy who can close because closing is so vital. But you're right, man. You need to have someone who can shut the door, and you can't have a guy who's just going to flirt with shutting the door in that situation.
Sure, and I think that's the luxury of having the two in the back that can actually close games out for you. And I just hope that there's a situation where you could go for that save situation in the sixth and seventh instead of the ninth. That's kind of what I meant by the question. So, yeah, I think we're all in agreement on that. But Daniel, I agree with you that we probably will never see that.
Well, and, you know, again, we're not seeing Rosenthal go more than an inning. We're not seeing Rosenthal go on back-to-back days. They're really trying to limit his workload. And that doesn't help when you have situations like that. Because if you could bring – well, if you're talking, you know, like that game that Adam Wainwright had what was it, in Miami, that he did load the bases in the sixth inning. If you bring Rosenthal in there and he gets out of it, if you can pitch him the seventh as well, then that kind of limits some issues. And, you know, heck, you know, like Kyle says, having somebody to close is a good thing, and that's true. But if you can get the game right there, I mean, it could be a 4-1 game in the ninth then instead of a tight game. And even you would hope even Broxton or somebody could handle that if necessary, but you don't know how the game is going to play out, obviously. But I just don't. I think that, again, even divorcing this from Mike Matheny, because to be fair, Mike Matheny is going to treat this pretty much like, you know, 95% of the managers in baseball are going to treat this, and he's going to have his guy that pitches the eighth pitch the eighth, and have his guy that pitches the ninth, and very rarely are they going to get out of those roles. But, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. Now, you know, they've brought Bowman in the past in situations into that. And I think even they might have even done that this week had Bowman not been used as much. It seems like they've finally gotten the note that Bowman might not should pitch every day if he wants his arms to be attached. Because he's pitched, I think, three, maybe four times this month, which is, you know, it's not too bad for a guy from the, that seems to be about normal, but he was pitching just about every day there for a while.
Yeah, you know, Alan, to your point, to answer your question, I think it's going to take a trip to the principal's office again for any, like, you know, any change in bullpen management. I think that's there.
You're right. And you know what? I say that and I almost feel a little bad because I think Matheny's done a good job since that happened. You can really tell a change in mindset, and he's showing a lot more faith. He's almost playing guys too much now, you know, to where guys aren't necessarily staying fresh. So some of us are never going to be happy. But, I think we all knew exactly where we were going with that.
Well, and it's funny you say that, and that'll switch to a little bit different thing. We've talked about Colton Wong and needing to have the benefit of his manager and all that kind of stuff. Since that return from New York, when they faced Pittsburgh in St. Louis, Colton Wong has played every inning of every game at that time. And is still hitting well, but as of late, this road trip, basically, not counting tonight, he's hitting 179. He's got 5 hits and 28 at bats. Now he's getting about a hit a night, so it's not like, and you know, had that extra inning game in there that kind of skews it a little bit as well. Again, you're right. We're never happy. Alan, is there a time that he needs to rest here and there, or is Matheny going to run him out there for the rest of the year?
I bet it'll be another week before we see a day off, just because. I bet he'll play this whole series against the Cubs just because they don't have that right-handed option for Lester. Mm-hmm. So I think that he'll get those at-bats. And then you can kind of play it because you got Monday and Thursday off next week.
Right.
The two games set. So I think we'll probably see it for at least another week. But, we are going to get into a situation where you're going to have to keep guys fresh. I'm loving the fact that he's playing every day. You know, that's flaws may get exposed. I don't know, but I'm pretty proud of the way that they've handled this. So, I hope his legs don't fall off.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle, he's looked pretty good. I mean, overall, I mean, we saw him make an error tonight, but I think that was just kind of one of those, you know, the balls, he just never got a grip on it. These things happen. I don't know if the, you know, like I said, he's kind of slumped a little bit in this road trip. That's also when they moved into the leadoff spot. I don't know if that's an impact or not. I mean, it feels like he was hitting very well, you know, 7th, 8th. And that may be, I think that's probably the best place for him, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. If you can leave things, you know, how they were before Fowler went down, that's the optimal usage for Colton Wong. The stats are exactly true about Colton Wong defensively. He is a defensive wizard who's going to make a lot of really easy mistakes. You just have to take the good with the bad. That's just how it has to be. He's always going to do that, you know. And right now he's hitting like right around 260, and he's getting on base about you know, right at 340, and that's perfect for him. And that's exactly what you need out of a 7th or 8th hitter. And if he can run, you let him run. And you know, personally, I think he needs a day off. I think that was part of the reason why he had that error today, and he had a couple weird at bats tonight. But Alan's right. You roll him out the weekend. You take the off day on Monday, and then you let the off day on Thursday take care of the rest of it until. And this is gonna freak people out, but until Johnny Peralta comes back, and you have an option to give him rest for a day.
Yeah, it you wouldn't think that maybe. I mean, you could see it either in the end of the Red Sox series or the game against the Giants on Sunday. One of those times where if you get the day off, then you get 2 days off because you get the off day after. That seems to be something that Matheny likes to do on some of these players, especially like Yadier or Molina. So that's a possibility. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's not a whole lot of options. You could run Greg Garcia out there, I guess. You could, you know, move Jerko over there and put Garcia at third. I mean, there's a few things you could do, but for the most part, it's very good to see him out there every day. I don't think there's any complaints going on there. So it's been an interesting one. Let's talk. You know, the starting rotation looks good. I think we saw good outings from pretty much everybody, even Adam Wainwright. You got the idea. I guess maybe we should talk about the fact. Should Adam Wainwright ever pitch after the fifth inning? I mean, it feels like right now, you know, it feels like right now that's about all that he's got in him. We saw it in Miami. He had a good 5 innings. He was about 85 pitches. You know, some bad luck, but, you know, the first 3 batters of the 6th inning get on base. And then, of course, Cecil let him score. But so his line looks worse than it is. I mean, Alan, he's only gone past the 5th once this year, and even that game was a game, it was at the end of a doubleheader. I mean, I think if the bullpen had been fresh, maybe he doesn't. Is Wainwright just a 5-inning pitcher?
Yeah, I think so. I think that we've gone over this a lot ad nauseum at this point, that he's your 5th starter. I mean, that's just how it's going to go. But it's still tough to know that maybe running him out there is mailing it in. And that's where it's a little difficult right now. But yeah, I thought the same thing. I thought he looked really good in Miami until the last inning, and just kind of ran into trouble. So you know that maybe extending him into that 6th probably shouldn't have happened. I know that a bunch of my DMs were going off pretty heavy, like why is he back out there? But I'm like, well, you can't get more than 5 at this point. You know, yeah, I don't know what to do. So, but you know, yeah, if you think about it, you're just like, you know, if he can give him 5 and you have Lyons who could go multiple innings, well, then I think you look a lot better that way. So I don't think anything's going to change. That's the one thing that's kind of disheartening about it. So I hope that whatever he's still searching for in the middle of May, he'll find eventually. But, you know, yeah, I don't know the answer.
Kyle, let's marry this discussion into something else that happened this weekend. The Cardinals announced after on the off day like yesterday that Michael Wacha wasn't going to pitch this weekend, that they were going to rest him because of the off days and things like that to give him a little extra rest. Now, it does not appear that he is hurt now, and I want to discuss whether this is a good idea to rest him or not here in a minute, but is this the right time to do that? I mean, there's more off days coming. And it really feels like, to me, you'd rather have Wacha out there against the Cubs than Wainwright right now.
Yeah, I'm totally confused. I think the only person that's more confused than me is Michael Wacha. They asked Wacha, and he's like, I didn't have anything to do with this. This is, you know, I don't understand any of it. Like you said, you've got a nice little set of off days. I heard Mo in the pregame today say something about you know, getting clever at the All-Star break to get guys rest. I think right now they might just be overthinking it a little bit, especially if Wacha feels healthy. And, you know, he was pretty blunt today about saying, I know I feel good, I feel fine. This, you know, without saying this isn't my decision, you know, bluntly saying it, you know, just saying that it wasn't something that I went to them about, you know, none of it makes sense to me. You need to win you need to win as many games out of three against the Cubs as possible. Mm-hmm. Wayno would be the best opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at least Arrieta is struggling as well, and so that might be a 10-9 slugfest or something like that on Sunday. But, you know, Alan, I guess the idea is rest him now so he'll be fresh later, that he might work later. But it just, I'm not sure that there's a correlation, and they know more than I do, so, but I'm not sure there's a correlation between his pitching and the stress reaction. It just feels to me that he could rest all you want here and there. He still may run into that thing.
Sure.
And you're going to wind up missing some starts out of him that you could have gotten. Again, that's a non-medical opinion, obviously. They do know more, but I just don't know that rest is as effective as they think it may be.
Well, yeah, I agree with that completely. I'd heard the being creative around the All-Star break at it. I've heard him say that before, too, with Wacha about, even with Martinez, I've heard him say how he may even skip some starts to you get, and the way that he maps it out makes a lot of sense. But here's my thing. I think that you're on borrowed time with Wacha, and I would think that they think the same thing. Not to say run him out until he gets injured, but is this skipping this one start and being creative around the All-Star break, what's it going to get you? I mean, if it's an injury concern, does it buy you two more starts, three more? And is that into September? Does it run you into the end of the season, and then he's a wreck for the playoffs? So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the end game is realistically on it. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, they know a heck of a lot more than we do. So I don't know. I just think that he's pitched well, and I have a lot of confidence in him being on the mound. And I was thinking, you know, Walker or Lynn in that Sunday night game would be really nice to see other than a Walker, because I wholeheartedly think that Arrieta pitches well Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, we'll see. He has done – all the Cardinals have gotten to him before, even when he was, you know, on top of the world. So maybe not, but you're right. It's one of those things that about the time that everybody talks about how bad they are, that's when they start coming back to earth and back to normal.
This whole series, that's kind of how I felt. Whenever they played so bad on the, you know, in Colorado, I was thinking the what they need, the one thing that will energize them is to come into St. Louis to where you're playing more on adrenaline because you're playing your rival to win two out of three and say, hey, look, we were playing tired and we still won the series. You know, one of those. I get to see it happening.
Yeah. Well, I think that probably covers most of what happened this past week. Let's transition into our next segment, up the middle.
Alisaev, the second for one, the double play! What a double play by Ozzie Smith! Oh, mercy!
And here, I just want to talk about this roster construction. And I was listening to Derek Gould and Benjamin Hockman on Best Podcast in Baseball. And, you know, Derek calls it roster angst, and he kind of, to some degree, I think, poo-poos this idea because baseball tends to work itself out, which we've discussed before. You know, you think you have too many pitchers, you have too many outfielders, somebody gets hurt, whatever. You know, that being said, I think it's still reasonable to kind of, with the knowledge that things could change, kind of look at what this team is going to look like here in the next 2 weeks. You know, we kind of got some updates today. Steven Piscotty probably going to Memphis on Monday, and it sounds like he may only play like a couple of games before he's back. Johnny Peralta is going down to Memphis to play. That sounded like it might be a little bit more extended, but even so, excuse me, maybe even by the end of next week, he's fine. You know, I don't know where Jose Martinez is. I don't think I've heard. But then you've got Tyler Lyons who's going to go down, and they want him to stretch out to 55, 60 pitches. So, you know, probably at most two starts in Memphis, maybe just one. There comes a time when these guys got to get on the major league roster. Kyle, let's start with the obvious one. I mean, obviously when somebody comes back, and you know, we've kind of talked a little bit, Sierra goes down. Where does Sierra go to, though? I mean, he comes from Palm Beach. Does he go back to Palm Beach?
Yeah, you know, this question, I've probably spent more time thinking about this question than any other baseball-related question all week.
Except whether they'd sign Lewis Robert. But
yeah, we'll get to that one step at a time. Don't throw on me.
Yep.
No, I really don't know what's going to happen, and that's kind of exciting for me. I think the natural inclination is to maybe get a little aggressive with him. I know the one thing I wouldn't do is I wouldn't mess around with the Springfield setup. You know, I love the way Oscar Mercado has played in center field. He's shown like a really aggressive defensive center field, and to move him off of center field I think would be a big mistake for the organization. And, you know, like I said about Bader's just a really interesting player. So, you know, a lot of his value to another team is going to be tied up into if he can play center field. And he needs to continue to show that he can play center field. So, say Mags goes down to Memphis, that puts Bader in a corner, and it starts chipping away at his value a little bit if say, you wanted to use him in a trade. Mags wasn't exactly hammering the ball at Palm Beach either. He was getting on. You know, the one thing people keep forgetting about Mags is he was only a week removed from a concussion stint, right. A DL concussion mm-hmm. stint. He got recalled. So he's been really impressive up here, but he's making decent contact, but he still has a lot of work to do at the plate. You know, he needs to get stronger, and I would personally send him back down to Palm Beach just for now. A lot of things will change. A lot of things will move in the next month. And I would personally, and it would probably be the wrong move to make, but that's what I would do.
I mean, that's the way, you know, listening to both you and then I think, you know, Gould said a lot of the same things about, you know, not, there's just no place to put him any higher up right now. Even though you wouldn't expect a guy that's played and got, you know, done well in the major leagues to fall back as far, you know, like we used to see. We saw Trevor Rosenthal make the jump from AA up to the majors, and then he went back to Memphis. You would expect something like that for a guy like Sierra, but there's just really not a place for him to do that, and he's got to be, you know, he's got to play center field someplace, and he's got to learn. So, when that's one of our Twitter questions from, I think, Mr. Kelly, who tends to send us one, Beefcake5, and that was where do you send him? And I just, as weird as it sounds, I think he does return from to where he was at. But like you said, it may be a quick time where he winds up in Springfield when Mercado works up to Memphis, when Bader gets traded or something like that. It'll be, and I mean,
go ahead.
Well, I just wanted, I want to throw out the idea that, I mean, Sierra's, we keep talking about Bader being trade bait. Sierra has now proven that he can, you know, has some major league ability. I mean, I don't feel like the Cardinals are wanting to move him, though. I think that they like that speed and everything. I mean, Allen, he would seem to be an attractive trade piece, but I don't think that's the way the Cardinals want to go. Do you?
No, I don't. And I wonder, I want to look at it from the organizational standpoint, how much of this promotion was not only a 40-man, how much of it was a carrot, and to say, hey, look, this is what could be done. This is what you need to improve on. This is what you got, you know, this is how you're going to be pitched. This is what you need to get stronger. You need to do this at the plate, but this is your end game. You know, you're next in line. How much of that goes into it? And Kyle, I had a question for you. Did he have a disappointing year last year?
Yeah, he had a weird year last year.
Okay, I knew there was something to it because I could have swore that John had put him in one of. You remember he had his top five minor leaguers and five most disappointing last year. And I'm pretty sure that he was in the five disappointing. And I'm wondering if there's not a motivational issue on that.
So, actually, to elaborate on that a little bit, both he and Edmundo Sosa were both at Peoria to start the year. And it might even have happened with Alcantara, too. But it was brutally cold in Peoria. So, for the first 2 months of the season, like, brutally cold, those guys really struggled. Like, immensely struggled. And then it got hot. And all of those guys got hot with the weather. So you're right. Maybe it was for motivation, but there is actually like a temperature track. And I was talking to one of my contacts in Peoria about this a couple weeks back. But there's actually like a temperature track where their actual success was like aligned with the temperature raise. As crazy as that sounds, just because they had never been exposed to it, you know. And
that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
When they're in short season. They're playing in Johnson City, still in the Gulf Coast, you know, right there near the Cardinals complex in Palm Beach. The only option they have at short season is at State College, which is in Pennsylvania, and most of those guys just jump State College. Mm-hmm. So it's a really interesting dynamic, but maybe you're right. Maybe it was just we're so impressed with you, and we sent you down to Palm Beach, and you probably didn't think you were going to go down to Palm Beach. You thought you were supposed to go to Springfield. But you're performing well, and this is your end game. You're going to be here eventually. Work for it.
And other guys to see it, you know, to be like, hey, if you see what you do, you see what he did in the spring, you see how hard he worked, he gets that first call. He's going to go back to work on things, but this is what you could do. You know, I thought about that when he came up. I was like, it just completely fit the mold of, hey, he impressed, let's get him up. Now it turns into you wonder how much they're using that to motivate him and, A, motivate other guys.
Yeah, you know, real fast to jump in, Dave Aminian, who writes for covers the Peoria Chiefs for their newspaper, he had a little sit-down interview with Mo, to your point, Alan, and he it was no coincidence that Mo was down talking to the Peoria kids, you know, a couple days after Mags gets a promotion and telling him, look, this guy was playing where you were playing last year and he's in the major leagues right now. And you're right. It was a system-wide message to everyone that if you perform, you're going to get rewarded.
Has Kyle, in your mind, in your opinion, has Sierra passed Bader maybe in the organization's mindset? And I say that, you know, again, listening to the podcast with Duhald, he pointed out that there's value in a guy like Bader not being on the 40-man roster, because if you try to trade him to another organization, they don't have to put him on their 40-man roster, at least not yet, which is probably the only reason they didn't add Bader right now, because odds are you're not going to need his three option years. He's very close to the major leagues. Do you feel like with this promotion that Sierra, even though he may not be as close to the big leagues, may have passed Bader in their mindset of how valuable he is to the future of the franchise?
Oh yeah, I think that's how it looked leaving spring training. He left, you know, both of them left this really solid impression with the team, but you know, Sierra looked like a legitimate center fielder. I mean, he's ready to play right now. We all know that at this point. It's a shame. I was talking to one of my guys. It's a shame that we haven't got a chance to see Sierra show off his arm yet. Because as great as his range is and thing is out in the outfield, his arm is this masterpiece of a cannon that needs to be put on display as quick as possible.
Yeah. there was a play in Miami that I thought we were going to get to, because I'd always heard that, and I can't remember the scenario. But it was somebody that was going to move on him and didn't, and I was like, this may be our chance to see this.
The rumor was that the word was out already, that that people already know about it, which
that's
is incredible.
Awesome.
And that's to your point, Daniel. Things like that are why he probably has jumped Bader in maybe the organizational depth chart. I wouldn't doubt it. I think the 40-man. Mags being on the 40-man is a convenient excuse to use Mags, but I wouldn't have been surprised if they needed an outfielder and neither Bader nor Sierra were on the 40-man if Sierra would have gotten the job.
That would not have surprised me at all. Also, real fast, D. Gould, him and Neil Hellner argued for 3 days about
I saw this.
Yeah.
And then, with the little bit that you just mentioned, proceeded to validate the points I were making. So, I don't even know what that means, just, So.
Yeah, I read your Twitter, at least some of your Twitter discussion, and it seemed like Gould kept talking about Sierra while you were talking about Bader. And never seemed to quite understand, you know, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Biscotti comes off the DL. That seems to be the first thing that's going to happen. Biscotti comes off the DL. Sierra gets sent down. That, easy enough. Okay. Let's assume, then, that the next thing that has to happen is Johnny Peralta coming off the disabled list. Now, Johnny Peralta is one of those names that as soon as... I have a feeling that at least 3 or 4 of the people that listen to this, of the 10, have probably just moaned and groaned, and maybe even turned it off because they don't want to hear about Johnny Peralta. He's a very... I don't want to say polarizing because there's not a whole lot of people that are for him. But it still feels like he's got to get on this roster somehow. Alan... What do you do?
It's a great question. As far as roster makeup, I think that you're right. I think Sierra goes down, but I think your outfield's set. I have a feeling that Martinez has holiday type groin issue now, and we may not see him for a while. So I think that your 4 outfields is set, which I like that rotation. I like Pham being up here as another outfielder, not a, you know, outfielder / first baseman or whatever we were doing early in the season. Didn't really answer the question, but I just don't know where he fits in. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. You know what, I saw a deal where I think in the 3 games that he's played, I think he played 3rd and once and was DH the other 2. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer. I mean, I don't want him taking away bats from Jerko, but, you know, to get something for him, and I've always felt like there was going to be a player-friendly trade made where he can go extend his career as a DH somewhere, that would happen. But they're going to have to play him, and he's going to have to hit for that to happen. I just don't know. I can't imagine who's expendable at this point unless you cut down a bullpen arm.
And, Kyle, I mean, that's the way we saw it. You know, Johnny Peralta, when Tyler Lyons was coming back and they had to do something, it wound up being that Peralta went on the disabled list and Lyons returned to give us 12 hitters and 13 pitchers, which is where they still stand right now. With a lot of off days in this mix, I know there's going to come a time, you know, in June where they're playing like crazy, but for right now it feels like, you know, 13 pitchers is overkill. I mean, is that the way this goes about? And if so, who's the one that has the problems?
Yeah, it'd be Tui if that's the immediate move that they would make.
Lowest hanging fruit, and that's a sad situation because he's looked pretty good.
And that's my problem with all this. Like, you have a small window to use Tui, and again, he hasn't necessarily earned it because he's had such problems in the past. But he's looked good so far when he's been up, and this is the time. Like, you need to know what you have there in case down the line Broxton's velocity drops, and so does his results. But you know. To tie this entire conversation back, if you're allowed to put Cecil on the DL, then you can just Cecil for Lyons and then Tui for Peralta, and then, you know, hold your breath and wish for the best with Peralta. Peralta's in an unusual situation because he's going to be at Memphis, right? And there's a lot of really good players at Memphis. Yeah, you want Paul DeJong to get the reps at short, and you want Patrick Wisdom to continue to get the reps at third. Part of me wonders, you know, if he doesn't spend an extended time down there playing short, playing third, and playing left field a little bit, and maybe even a little first just to see what kind of versatility he has, and to use all 30 days of his rehab assignment as you figure this stuff out.
Well, and I think rehab's just 20 days, isn't it? For some reason.
It used to be 30, but I'm also dumb, so keep that in mind.
Either way, you got to figure he's used some of it up with this trip to Palm Beach, and I don't know if the fact that he went to extended spring training while they went on the road counts for anything or not, whatever the case may be. You know, Mo is saying that he wants Johnny Peralta to basically play, you know, full games out in wherever, in the field. So it feels like to me that he's going to have to play at least a week in Memphis to really get an idea. And I think Mo's probably saying that in some regard because everything's going so well at the major league level that you can afford to do that. If people were struggling, he might skip the rehab or whatever. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I don't know where he plays. It feels like, you know, you hate to see him overshadow some guys like Wisdom and DeJong that really need the reps, but he's got to play somewhere too. And it just doesn't feel like, of course, as the season gets closer to the end, that's less dead money that you do for cutting him. But it still just doesn't feel like the Cardinals are going to say, hey, you know, don't bother coming back to St. Louis. They're going to get him on there somehow. And like, you know, y'all said, try to maybe, you know, somehow package him. Hope he comes out and has about a 2-week hot streak that shows that he still has something in his bat and then send him off to American League team.
Yeah, that's we've said this from the beginning. I don't think we've seen him. I don't think we've seen the last of him in a Cardinal uniform. I don't know how long that's going to last, but I think that's the plan, you know, for him to come back up. It was funny whenever Mozeliak was on with Nicklaus yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and he said some really weird things. You can tell that there's a plan in place if he's ready. And I don't know what that is, but I just can't imagine anybody on any position player on the roster right now being. I don't think any of them will be jettisoned for him to play. And Mozeliak made that clear. He goes, "There's not a place for him to play right now." He goes, "We have the option of he's going to be at the ballpark tomorrow. We're going to see how well he's moving. We're going to put him through full workouts, and then we do have another option. We have the option of another rehab." And he used those words.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then today he made the comment. He said, we're either going to start that Monday or Tuesday. So they must have this timed out well to how they're going to do it. They must have a better plan than we know. What that is, I'm really curious to find out.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no telling. And you know, nobody seems going to make any deals. I mean, Mo's not going to make any trades anytime soon. That even you could even worry about throwing him into a deal. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I was about to say it didn't even make sense. I thought, well, maybe Memphis was just on the road and he'd wait till they come back. But they're home right now, will be for the most of next week, and then they go out on the California trip. So that will be interesting. Will they send Johnny Peralta out to Fresno and Sacramento, you know, or is that when they call him up? Or do they send him down to Springfield? I mean, who knows? I imagine John Mozeliak would just really wish that, you know, he didn't have, you know, he'd signed Peralta to a 3-year deal instead of a 4-year deal, and not have this issue. But trying to figure this thing out is difficult. Now, I think we all seem to be in agreement, though, what Alan was saying earlier, Kyle, that Tommy Pham needs to stay in the major leagues, at least for an extended period of time. I mean, Jose Martinez, he has an option. I mean, you could always option him down to the minors if you wanted to, or if he stays out for a long period of time, maybe Pham's cooled off. But it really feels like Tommy Pham needs to play at least as the fourth outfielder here in the big leagues, doesn't it?
Yeah, without a doubt. They called it a grade 2 groin strain, right, for Jose Martinez, so he's going to be out for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The break
may be safe to say. I mean, it's one, you know, that's 2 months, but that's realistic.
Okay, I had not heard any. I guess I haven't heard anything except for he didn't think it was too serious right after it happened, but I hadn't heard anything about it since then, so.
Mo said something in the pregame about it today, okay, but he did,
and it was funny. Kyle and I were watching that same thing. Whenever Mo said it, Mo did the big time head shake, like he's not even close. Is what he said.
Yeah,
it was weird.
He called it a big league injury or something like that.
His wording's so awesome though.
Yeah, it's incredible.
He is. By the way, listen, we may have people that disconnect us right now. I love Mozeliak. I'm a huge front office guy. I'm a big believer. He has been salty. He's got something off his sleeve lately. I heard him with Mikolas and with Hayes today, and he was kind of getting on him. So I think he heard some of the Boo Birds as well. So it was that's intriguing to know to me.
But you know, honestly, and I say this with limited exposure to John Mozeliak because he does do the blogger question and answer every year. And so we've done that. This will be 6 years this year when we do it in June. Mo's got a sense of humor. He always has, and he's been very honest with it. I still remember, I think it was the first year we did this, and it was Ty Wigington who had been signed and was not hitting at all. And somebody, you know, made some sort of a comment or something about it, and he talked about, you know, it wasn't Wigington, it was Ryan Terrio. And he said it would be, you know, what he felt like Ryan Terrio brought. He said, now, yes, it would be nice if he hit more than my daughter's weight or something like that. I'm assuming that John's daughter is not very, very big. So, anyway, I mean, Mo tends to have a very dry humor, I think, to some degree. And I think that's when he's loose. And I think that was part of it. What you saw with, well, I listened to the Bernie one and I watched some of Jim Hayes today. Apparently missed some of it. I kept having to pause it because people were talking in the room. But anyway, I think he feels loose right now. And I mean, no doubt. I mean, the team is playing well. It's playing better. We've probably seen a better stretch of baseball in the last 2 weeks than we have since 2015.
Great point.
And so there has to be a little bit of a monkey off his back to some degree. So if Martinez is out for a long while, you know, that solves the question. But, you know, it feels like Tommy Pham, once he can figure out his eyes issue, and it always seems to be what always comes back to, he produces and he brings, and he and Sierra both have brought that speed and defense and athleticism that they talked about all year long. So, Kyle, I guess the question is, how long can he keep it up?
Oh, God, there's no telling. You know, for me, I think if you're using him right as a fourth outfielder and he's not getting overexposed, mm-hmm. and his contacts aren't breaking in his head, mm-hmm. I think he'll be a, and I'll eat these words, but I think he'll end up being a perfect fourth outfielder. I feel like I've been saying that now forever, and he proved me wrong last year. But maybe the vision problem is sorted out, and he can be the ideal, you know, three position outfielder, you know, coming off the bench,
which is exactly what they need.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it'll be. I mean, I guess if he ever does more than that, you start putting him in the trade bait discussion. But right now, it just I think that mix, especially once Piscotty gets back, and assuming Piscotty can hit at a level that we expect him to hit, and he's not really becoming an issue for the rest of us, that gives that opportunity for when Randall Grichuk is not hitting to put in Pham, and when Pham's not hitting to put in Randall Grichuk, and it feels like that may be how the rest of the year goes.
If we have a situation where I think we know what we're going to get with Grichuk. He may strike out three times, and then he may hit a bomb like he did tonight. I think that's what you're going to get. Super athlete, going to strike out a lot, but get those. If Piscotty took this as a mental health break as well as a rehab, and he comes back good, I think with the four of them, their outfield's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it. And, you know, I think that's the good thing. I think Mo's got options, but Mo doesn't have gaping holes to fill. I mean, now that's what we say right now. After, you know, 2 weeks ago, that's not what we were saying. So 2 weeks from now, who knows what we're talking about. But
sure.
For right now, it doesn't feel like there's a big push there. So, all right. Well, then let's go ahead and move on to Kyle's favorite segment.
I've been excited about this minors, all week. I'm not going to lie.
The Miners Report.
0-1 to Poole. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
Okay. First of all, I don't believe this, but we're going to have to actually issue a correction because John Mozeliak said yesterday on Bernie's show.
I'm holding steady on my pronunciation, but go on.
I'm going to say, John Mozeliak calls him Louis, I think he called him Louis Robert. And I got to say, I mean, I don't know that John has actually talked straight to him, but he's obviously talked to his reps. I gotta feel like I gotta go with John here, Kyle. I hate to break that to you, and it's nothing personal.
Kyle hangs up.
I mean, that's
had enough. So here's what I'm gonna say to that is I've actually heard him pronounce it, and that's why I always said Robert. So here's what I think might have happened. I think that this might be. This is going to sound crazy, but I think this might just be a marketing thing. I know it sounds terrible, but it streamlines things. It makes it easier. I was trying to remember back to Jonas Cespedes. And when he first broke onto the scene, they did a little, like, pronunciation change with his name. Of course, it wasn't, you know, as drastic as Robert to Robert. But everyone was pronouncing it Cespedes. Mm-hmm. So he just rolled with that for a while, and then now he's Jonas Cespedes. Yeah. I think that's what we might be dealing with here. Again, maybe it'll stay Robert, but you know, on one of my articles I published, especially about Luis Robert, he says, you know, I am Luis Robert Moran or whatever, and that's why I've been calling him that all along. But things changed, and maybe he decided that Robert has a ring to it.
Well, and I mean, you go back and look at, you know, remember Giancarlo Stanton was Mike to start with. So sometimes they do just kind of to go along with whatever. I imagine it's like you pay me enough money, you can call me whatever you want to. And they're going to pay him a lot of money. The Cardinals had a private workout with him last week in secret. We didn't find out about it until about 2 days after it happened. We have a question from, and he told me not to butcher his Twitter name, so I'm going to butcher his Twitter name. Tufels Hund 4. Let's go with John. Since that's what it says right there, we'll go with John.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Anyway, and he wants to know the odds of Mo landing Robert or Robert or whatever or however you want to say it. And how much it's going to cost.
If Mo calls him Robert, I will respect our general manager, and I will disrespect myself, which I do on a regular basis, and I will respect our manager. Here's what I think. Today was a really interesting, and I just read it because I worked all day, but I read the prospect hot sheet chat with Ben Badler today, and Ben Badler has been tapped into this from the beginning. I remember when Ken Rosenthal tweeted out that Robert would be allowed to sign, and I was heartbroken about that because Ben Badler's been on top of this. You know, he should have been the one to break that news. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that aside, he's been very candid about stuff. And today in the prospect hot sheet chat, he was asked once, what's it going to take? What kind of a contract was it going to take? And it was the first time he's ever been coy about it. He said, I'm not – he said something about not speculating about the contract of a Cuban player, which to me tells me that he already knows what the contract is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they asked a little bit later, and I can't remember exactly what the question was. Oh, again, it was about his contract and if it was going to be close to Yon Moncada's. And he said something like – he played it off again with the same line, and he said, I'll tell you this. I had Moncada higher than where I have Robert, and he said something like, take that for what it is. And, you know, in between that and then another comment he made about the team who signs him is the team that's going to give him the most money, it definitely seems like this thing is pretty well set at this point. Whoever it is, I'm not sure.
But you, not to cut you off, Kyle, but no, with Badler saying that, he's also been real adamant that the White Sox were going to be the heavy favorite. That's what concerns me about it.
Yeah, he seems dialed in with the White Sox. I've been looking at this differently than most people when it comes to the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've done such a poor job of formulating the words, but the White Sox are the one team that have the most to lose by signing him. Because if they sign him, then that pushes them over their limit, which means next year they're completely handcuffed. You know, they won't be able to spend $300,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So them signing him, that says that they view him not only as a transformative talent, but they also view him as substantially better than any other prospect that they'd be able to sign next season. You know, whereas that's not both the Cardinals are in. The Cardinals are already over. They're already handicapped for next year, you know, as is with the Reds and the Padres and the Astros and so on. So I've always looked at it a little bit differently. And, you know, he has been tied in with the White Sox, Alan. So maybe you're dead on.
Now, the White Sox organization is one of those to me that I think they make stupid decisions constantly, and I point directly at Kenny Williams for it. Do you think they believe that they can get him and him being that piece, not needing anything else other than – that sounds stupid, but roll with me here. The haul they got for Chris Sale and Eaton, that he could be the final piece in that next wave of talent they have coming?
Yeah, you know, I definitely think there's something to that. I mean, Moncada's knocking at the door, you know. The White Sox have played. They've outperformed their projections this year. Their record is better than the team that they are. And I mean, yeah, I definitely think that's the case. I think they think if, you know, in the next calendar year they can have Robert and Moncada on the major league roster. That's really impressive. You know, this time next year Mike Kopech will be knocking on the door.
Yeah.
If he's got his control issues worked out. So yeah, I definitely think it is. I think all the teams involved have a reason to go all in on him. And again, it just comes down to who's going to write the biggest check, who feels the most comfortable. You know, the Reds have one of the best – I was reading an article, like, sabermetric-wise, the Reds have one of the best defenses and maybe the best defensive outfield in baseball so far this season. You know, they haven't played terrible. They're here. Well, what if they sign Robert and it gets them over the hump? Like all every team except for San Diego, because that's a mess that's years away from being ever fixed. But all the other teams, the Astros, all the other teams have a legitimate like window that Robert would accelerate. So yeah, I don't know what to think is going to happen. I'm a big fan of believing that if you're not hearing about the Cardinals, then that means the Cardinals are involved heavily.
And Mo is pretty. I mean, obviously he's tempered a lot of his public statements, which is probably a good sign as well. I think if they really kind of felt like they were out of it, I think he might say some different things to kind of, you know, hesitate, not to build up any excitement. But you know, he continues to reiterate what kind of a talent he is, and again, they've made the effort to go out there. It feels like they understand everything that we've talked about for weeks now of how much, you know, how important he is to get. Now, he's a free agent as of, well, by the time this show goes out, it will be, because we're running not close to the midnight hour as it is, he will be a week from becoming where he could sign. Is there a Kyle? I mean, I haven't seen. There was some thought that he would have one more public workout for all the teams, and then perhaps sign. Is there any indication he's going to do that this week, or do you think that maybe, you know, the private workouts were enough, and they'll just make their decision that way?
Yeah, I think there'll be one more showcase. I think it'll probably be like a similar to what, you know, what his first showcase was. It probably won't be against live, you know, like simulated live pitching, like. You know, it won't be a full bore like simulated game. It'll be batting practice, fielding, something very low key. And you'll probably see all the teams involved, and they probably won't send, you know, you won't see Kenny Williams. You won't see John Mozeliak. It'll just be, you know, high ranking scouts. It won't be executives that'll get involved.
So, yeah, I definitely think you'll see one more of those, and my guess is it'll be probably right at the end of the week, probably next Thursday or Friday. It seems, if I've been tracking it right, other than the Reds, who I think worked him out on a Tuesday, it seems like the end of the week workout is kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll know at the end of the week.
Does it matter that Jumbo Zalock went to this workout? I mean, does that out as well indicate that the Cardinals are very serious here because they're sending somebody like that?
So this is what gets me. You know, I think back to that, and I feel like I talk about it way too much. I think back to that that Q&A in Memphis, and when I asked Mo about Robert, he said his line was he certainly has the potential to be like a once in a lifetime talent, and then he stopped himself and he said, I can't actually say that because I've never met or seen him, and that's what I keep going back to.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I definitely think Mo being down there, and I definitely think that makes a big difference. Now, that also tells me that Mr. Robert needed to make a hell of an impression on Mo, because if he came across as, you know, maybe being a flippant athlete or, you know, a reserve player or, you know, whatever it might be that might rub Mo wrong, then maybe that is a deal breaker for Mo. Maybe if he doesn't feel like he's a baseball gym rat or blah, 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 whatever. That might be the difference in between offering him a $30 million contract to sign, you know, a bonus to sign, or a $20 million, like, we see your talent, but you're just not that next level for us. It is definitely significant. There's no way around it. But I also think it's a great sign that Mo went down there, because Mo recognizes that this is that kind of talent, and now it was time to get to know him.
Yeah, and again, you know, he had that interview with Bernie yesterday and still had fairly glowing things to say about Robert in his restrained fashion that I'm not going to give anything away, which is, you know, typical Mo. He still seemed to be very, very high on him. And so it would indicate that he was impressed at least enough out of that deal, out of that workout. So, as much as I hate to cut Kyle off on this subject, let's talk about some of the guys that are currently in the minor league system. And before we get into the week that was, I think it's something we haven't talked a lot about and probably should. Daniel Ponce de Leon took a comeback off the head to the point that he needed, you know, surgery to reduce the swelling on the brain. You know, it seems like everything is fine. It seems like there's no lasting injury, no lasting damage. But, I mean, Kyle, besides the scariness and what this might start off on, this idea of pitcher protection and things like that, I mean, what does this do for a guy that, you know, had been already promoted to Memphis this year and really kind of was knocking on the door to be one of those guys to come up at some point in time this year?
You know, it's funny. I'm generally a cold, heartless person. And this one really, like, for whatever reason, I guess because I've been such a big fan of his, you know, this one really hits home. Like, I can't even wrap my head around the baseball implications about it. I just, you know, all, you know, even from like a safety perspective for other pitchers or what it means for him in the organization, like I can't even get my mind there, because all I think about is, you know, him needing surgery to relieve pressure on his brain and thinking, man, you know, they said he's been eating and he's been talking throughout this entire process, which is awesome. And of course anything can go wrong immediately, but I can't even get past the fact that I just hope this kid has a chance to live a normal life. And again, I haven't even thought about any of that other stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, we see it at times. It's not the first pitcher that's had this, but, and it's not the first, you know, when a batter's have this issue as well, when there's a serious beating, you know, trying to get back on that mound or get back in that batter's box after something like that happens, I mean, that's profiling courage as it is. I mean, just to be able to get out there and, and pitch again if he ever is able to do that. And again, we don't know where his career is going to take him, but to overcome that and not being flinching and not being shying away every time bat hits ball, wow, that's got to be tough.
Yeah, for sure. I can't imagine, man. I can only imagine.
Mm. To take his place, at least right now, is Marco Gonzalez, who will be going to Memphis and may also throw a wrench into that whole roster thing we were talking about. I think, if I remember right, Marco actually does have the option, so that's fine. He's not on a rehab that has to come up in 20 or 30 days like the others. He can stay in Memphis for a while. Kyle, this is his first one back from the surgery. What are we looking at?
You know, I heard nothing but positive reviews about his start with Palm Beach. The only thing I didn't see is I didn't get a consistent reading on how hard he was throwing. He was throwing a lot of strikes, which is encouraging. You really can't get enough of that, especially your first start. He went seven innings for Palm Beach. He struck out six. I think he let up four hits, let up one earned run. And, like, that's uncommon coming back from Tommy John surgery, making your first start, even at a minor league level. So he was in control. I think he threw – it was 79 pitches and 52 were strikes, so he was throwing a good percentage of strikes. I'm excited about seeing him pitch for Memphis. I think that this is the situation because the fact that he has he has an option. You can get excited, and you don't have to like temper your expectations because the expectations aren't that he has to pitch in the major league level. Like we get to sit back and watch him redevelop, and hope that he stays healthy and all that stuff, but. Yeah, it's a tragedy what happened to Ponce, and my guess is that they probably still would have they might have ran a six man rotation for a while. They were going to do that in Springfield, but yeah, let's see what Marco can do. You know, let's get a little competition in between Luke Weaver and him, and see who's going to be the best pitcher on that staff until John Gant comes back. And
that was my next question. Okay.
Yeah. About Gant.
About Gant. Yeah.
You know, I have no idea. I know he was working out. He's been throwing simulated innings at extended spring training. But the fact, I had read that like 2 weeks ago at this point. But the fact that I haven't heard anything really other than that he's continuing to throw and continuing to progress, the fact that he hasn't like gone out on a rehab is kind of interesting to me. But yeah, no, I'm anxious to see what Marco can do against something other than Palm Beach talent. Get him in Memphis. Get him in. Him, Weaver, working against each other and see what happens.
Well, and so far, even though Gonzalez hasn't gotten to that level yet, it seems maybe that's working. We've seen some, it sounds like, some good starts out of Weaver as of late as well. I mean, is he burnishing his star? I mean, how is that working for him?
I watched part of his start the other night, and he looked exactly like he looked in Springfield. He's throwing a bunch of different pitches. Brian Stahl had an interview with him, did a great job. He talked about commanding a couple different pitches, throwing a couple different things. You know, I think he might be overthinking it a little bit. I saw a lot of what I saw when he was in Springfield, and that was a kid who stayed low in the zone and painted the corners and used the changeup and, a curveball that's since been refined a little bit. It's still not great, but used a curveball. That really worked because he kept it low in the zone. That's I will maintain that's what hurt him at the major league level. He was trying too hard and he was leaving things up, and that's just not something he's ever going to be able to do, especially with the drag and drop type pitcher he is. The get low and throw. He absolutely needs to keep it low because if he doesn't, it's nothing but batting practice. No matter how nasty the pitch.
You're exactly right. I mean, that's because I felt like. Yeah, you know so much more about that than I do. I felt like home runs were the kryptonite last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He'd have great starts, and they'd just give up a couple bombs and just ruin it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like Mike Leake, right? Mike Leake tonight, the two mistakes he made were exactly the replicant of what happened to him last year. The sinker didn't sink right, and it stayed high, and it ended up being meat. And that's exactly what Luke Weaver has to deal with.
if he's anywhere other than belt high, and even playing, you know, getting belt high is dangerous, but if he's higher than that, because of his arm angle, because of his mechanics, it's nothing but batting practice, no matter what pitch it is, on what count. So, yeah, he's looked really good. He's been impressive. It's pretty much the same story week in and week out with the top three levels in the minors. There's two guys that you can count on to do well, one guy who does well, and then the other guys who do okay. And then Peoria is a different beast altogether because Jordan Hicks is the only one pitching well there, and Ronnie Williams has been removed from the rotation. They put him in the bullpen, which is shocking. And yeah, man, it's the pitching in the organization is as good as you could hope for it to be right now.
Yeah, and I guess to some degree, if Luke Weaver just wants to give up two solo home runs every game, that's all right. I mean, you know, I mean, that's kind of what I mean, a little bit what we saw until he hit some bad stuff at the end of the season last year. He was when he did that give start, up a home run, they didn't tend to have people on base. I mean, if that's your only hit, then you shake it off and you deal with it, and hopefully you can win a game where you give up just two runs, whether they're solo home runs or whatever.
Yeah, you're right, Daniel. It felt like he was exhausted in that last start in San Francisco, if you remember. Well, you know, he threw that clunker up in San Francisco where as Cardinals fans were like, this season's over. You know, that was in game two. Then they turned around and won the next two to kind of salvage that series against the team they were head-to-head against in that wild card. But, yeah, I kind of had that feeling. You're just like, I think he's reached his limit.
Well, in that outing in Colorado when he came in relief and just...
Oh, good point. I forgot about that.
So... Kyle, I know that, I haven't checked. I assume that, your weekly wrap up of the minor leagues will be hitting Redbird Daily tomorrow. Is there any teaser you want to do on that?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of boring at Memphis. We had two repeaters from last week. Paul DeJong again he's been the catalyst behind their, you know, winning 12 of their last 13 entering Friday night. And Arturo Reyes had two amazing starts at Memphis that, I mean, you're going to want to read about. That hit the second best start of his minor league career, and, you know, which is a big deal because he wasn't getting, you know, he was piggybacking off of Tyler Lyons' rehab starts. Mm-hmm. So to see him have a chance to transition from a long reliever back to a starter is really promising. The star of the week, worth talking about again, and this one didn't get as much publicity as the last one, but Junior Fernandez again outpitched everyone in the system. He threw the first complete game of his career. The game score was 85, which is the second highest game score in the minor leagues for the Cardinals this season, behind his own 90 from earlier when he took a no hitter into the eighth. Or a perfect game into the eighth. That's really encouraging because a lot of people had him ticketed for the bullpen. They said this is a bullpen arm. This is a bullpen arm, and he's done a really good job to salvage his season. So yeah, that's those are the things that I've really keyed in on. Read a little bit about what Junior Fernandez did, and there's a kid at Peoria who I'm big on. He was part of our best of the rest. His name is Andrew Niesner. We've talked about him. We'll leave that alone. But he had a great week, and he even hit a home run again tonight, which won't reflect on this week, but that would make three home runs in 8 days for him. Mm. And he's a catcher right now who's still learning the position. He's a really interesting guy. I'll go into it, but he played on the same college team as Trey Turner. He got the scholarship as a shortstop. Well, they moved him to third because Trey Turner was there. And he ended up winning freshman All-American honors as a third baseman, and he was an academic All-American. And then the next year in that offseason, after he won the freshman All-American award, they told him they wanted him to learn to catch. Mm-hmm. So he became a catcher and got himself on a bunch of different radar, you know, got himself on the radar for a draft. 2 years later, he got drafted. So he's only in his, like, third full season as a catcher right now, and he's still learning the trade. He's slow behind the plate a little bit, but he's athletic and he's powerful, and he doesn't strike out a lot, and he walks, like, his walks and strikeout numbers are nearly identical so far in the minor leagues. So read a little bit about him, because he could be one of these guys who sneaks onto the scene, and you know, this time next year is a top 25 prospect.
And finally, to wrap it up, as you know, as Alan knows, I am going tomorrow night to watch Springfield play the Travelers in Little Rock. Who should, besides the fact, you know, Sandy Alcantara's pitching, obviously Oscar Mercado's, and Aldous Garcia are out there. Is there anybody else to note in particular while we're watching the game tomorrow night?
Well, that's, I mean, really, those are the, you know, those are the hot names. Those are the guys to take a look at, you know. From a, like a Traveler's perspective, they really don't have a lot there. That's probably, that's honestly, that's probably the weakest team in the Mariners organization. But their leadoff hitter, whose name is Chuck Taylor, and which is incredible when you think about it. There's just there could never be enough Chuck Taylors in the world. They're pretty good, but yeah, you know, that's exactly what you're going to look out for. You know, the thing about the Springfield team is they have a roster that also has a bunch of older guys on there. You know, Alex Mejia, who's been in the organization forever, and Bruce Caldwell, and Jacob Wilson, whose name has been floated around 100 different times by 100 different people. There's a catcher there who's caught really well. His name's Gabriel Lino. He has a really interesting story, but he's hit the ball really well. You might want to keep an eye out on him. He might not even catch. He and Jenner have split time there. But yeah, that's the gist, man. Enjoy yourself and really get into it. I'm going to rely on your scouting report for this game, so I need you.
I wouldn't do that because I'm taking besides the fact that even if it was just me, that it wouldn't be worth much, then I've got the family too, so we'll see how much I get to watch. But I will tell you what I see, and that may just not be much. So
yeah, you may be more helpful with how tasty those dipping dots are going to be.
Yeah.
Possible too. All right, well, then let's get into our final segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
And honestly, like I said, we did not have very many Twitter questions this time, and we've addressed all the ones that we received. And so I guess I will just leave it up to, we'll let each of one of y'all have a crack at, you know, whatever you want to talk about. If you want to talk about some Cardinals, if you want to talk about something else, briefly, some last little rant that you want to do. Alan, I'll turn the floor over to you first and let you go at it.
Kyle, I was excited to have you this week just because Springfield rolled through Tulsa last weekend. And a buddy of mine, after the Alcantara game, he shows up to our league game on Sunday and he goes, "Man, I saw the future of the Cardinals last night." And we were talking about it, and I was kind of going over some of the stuff that you told me about the prospects and whatnot. And the further we had talked just a little bit ago, and then listening to Mosey like yesterday, is he specifically called Arturo Reyes a potential bullpen arm on that in the Bernie interview yesterday. And after we talk about Marco, and I see how sometimes they think that he's going to be one of those lefty bullpen arms, that may be his future. And then you have an Alcantara type deal. We may be looking at that bullpen upgrade, you know, sometime later this summer, right in the organization. I still think they go get somebody, but it's pretty exciting the arms that they have coming up. I think they're loaded pitching wise, and it's you know, that's what makes a good ball club.
Yeah, for sure, man. Daniel, what I'm anxious for you tomorrow is watch how Alcantara uses that fastball, and because that's what he struggled with the most. His secondary stuff's been surprisingly good. He's still a little wild with it, but he hasn't quite learned that you can't throw a meat fastball no matter how hard it is right down the middle of the plate at the double A level. So tomorrow, if for every second that you get to watch him, just see where he's putting that fastball, because I'm willing to go all in that if it's, you know, if he keeps it high, he's fine. if he does anything else with that, but he has this really terrible tendency to try to overthrow it, and it goes right down the middle of the plate. So keep an eye on that. With my time, you know, it's fun to do the comp thing, but I would ask you, the both of you, you've seen a little bit of Mag Sierra, yet you guys are both, you know, a little bit older than I am. You've seen a lot more baseball than I have. Is there anyone that he reminds you of? Maybe not. Is there someone that he reminds you of? But who was the last guy that came up that had you, like, who actual on-field talent, like, had you as excited as him?
Mine's pretty easy, Daniel. I'll let you go first. Mine may be way too obvious, though.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about comparing Sierra, and it's still a little beyond my. I mean, I watched a little bit back then, but it's still a bit young. But, you know, there were a number of people making the Vince Coleman comparison, which is probably tied to mainly speed and everything like that, obviously. But, you know, that could be interesting. I mean, the most exciting, though, that's come up from the organization, boy, you might have to go back to Pujols. I mean, and because, you know, if you're talking about hitters. Because the organization, you know, has had some guys you'd like. We didn't see enough of Tavares. I guess that's probably
well, that's where I was going with
yeah.
mine. Yeah, as far as a guy that came up like this to where, like, hey, we need a bat quick. Like, I thought Tavares, I was so ready for him to be up anyway. So when he came up, I was like, okay, here we go. That's what it kind of reminded me of.
Yeah, and I think that's probably very accurate. The problem, of course, we didn't get Tavares for very long, and two, except for that home run in the rain in his first game, you know, and you had the whole, you know, Matheny's not playing him, you know, he's struggling a little bit, he's going back down here, and he's bouncing back and forth. I think that, you know, Sierra is just, he's kind of that surprise guy, guy that you just didn't know, and I think Pujols to some degree. I mean, we knew about Pujols, he'd had a good minor league year, but we went into that spring not expecting to see Albert Pujols make the roster, even after Fernando Tatis was traded. I remember thinking, well, what are they going to do? They're going to have to find a stopgap for a year before Pujols is ready, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then to have him come out and then to be what he was. Now, obviously, Max Sierra is not going to be Albert Pujols, don't get me wrong, but I think that level of buzz and excitement, it might have been there. And Tavares is probably a better pick, but I just feel like there were so many other things that went around Tavares that we didn't get a chance to just embrace what he could have been. I mean, if he'd come up and had a four games like Sierra's had, and if the team took off and won, you know, and there were so many different variables there. I just don't know that we got a chance to really get that full experience with Tavares, unfortunately.
I remember the Coleman pretty vividly. I was nine.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it really well because my grandpa drank the Kool-Aid right away. You know what I'm saying? He goes, he fits it perfectly because he and my dad were just all speed, defense, running. And the Ozzy did that team. You know what I mean? Ozzy changed the mindset. But as far as you could really tell when Sierra came up, though, that it really lit a fire under what could have been a stale clubhouse. You know, I mean, you can kind of tell a little bit different attitude because everybody watches his at-bats and everybody really watches him when he's on base. So that's that says a lot about a young kid like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think more of us, I mean, you look at him, he made the hardest catch the Cardinals have had this year by a stat cast. You had a guy that, I mean, that play where he just ran to second on a ground ball, you know, or just a ball that came in. I mean, I don't want to say nobody else on the team would have done that, because that's something that Matt Carpenter would have done, but he would have been thrown out by 15 feet. You know, I mean, that's what he would have done. To see somebody be able to do it and successfully was exciting. And I get the buzz that's around him, and I look forward to seeing what his career has. It's an interesting question. So, I don't know that I want to do a whole lot of ranting. So maybe I think I'm good. So we'll leave it alone right now. We'll see if we can get this thing under an hour 45 for once. So
perfect.
You know, I appreciate both of you joining me tonight. I look forward to it again. To our listeners, if you're still with us by this point in time, go find us on iTunes, go find us on wherever, rate us, review us. We appreciate it. We got a couple of reviews this week. I would love to see us get enough star ratings to actually have an average. I think you have to have like five or six of those before it shows up on the side there on iTunes. It would be kind of nice. So if you haven't done so, go ahead and go give us a star rating. You can give us five stars. Hey, we'll take that too. Whatever. Somewhere in the middle if you want. Do that. But until next week, when probably Alan and I will be joining you, and we'll try to get another minor league update from Kyle. Follow those guys on Twitter. Read them over at the Redbird Daily. You know where to find me. For Kyle, for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.